It's lights out and away we go.
And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo. Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, a longtime pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm in Perth in Western Australia.
And I'm Monique Chicardo. I am your post-Drive to Survive fan, and I'm at home in Stavanger in Norway. Wow. This final week of the 2024 season is basically the whole reason that Formula One fans love Formula One. This is what we live for. The drama, the emotion, and of course, action-packed racing. In this episode, we'll be discussing the wild race that was Abu Dhabi. It was the last race of the season and not at all what anyone would have expected. We're going to be talking about the rumours that are picking up heat off track thanks to performances or lack thereof performance on track. A little bit about the Formula 2 Championship and that baby news that I'm sure nobody saw coming.
For sure. It's been a wild week in Formula 1. All right. In Formula 2, my cousin, my adopted cousin, Gabriele Bortoletto with one T, not two, was crowned Formula 2 champion on the weekend. He came second in his race, which was enough to cinch the title since his biggest rival was, well, didn't even start, did he? Stalled on the grid.
Honestly, watching that race, the whole first lap, absolutely believed it was Hadjar that was fighting up there in third position and there was so much action. But after the first lap, there was a yellow flag and it was not Hadjar.
I know the commentators were like, oh my God, we're so sorry. We're so sorry. We thought that was Hadjar at, you know, fighting, you know, to take the lead, but no, it was his teammate instead. And, you know, going into the race, Hadjar was half a point behind Bortoletto in the championship. So the battle was hot and it was on, but it was over before it started, really.
I feel so sorry for Hadjar. That would have been the worst way to end your fight for the title. I didn't hear any of his post-race interviews or anything like that, but congratulations to Bortoletto, I guess. He didn't even have to fight.
Yeah, go my cousin. Yeah, absolutely. Hadjar did say on team radio, this is the worst moment of my life. Why did it stall? Oh, you got to feel for him. That's just such an unfortunate way to end the season for him, but so thrilled for the future Haas driver in Gabriele Bortoletto.
And this is the reason that we talk about Formula 2 and watch Formula 2, because it's the training ground for all our future F1 drivers. And we saw a lot of their names coming up in FP1 at Abu Dhabi because they were all in for their little training sessions in the cars. And if you watch Formula 2, you know who these people are already. So speaking of Formula 1, we couldn't have asked for a more interesting race to cap off the season. If we thought that Qatar was wild, crazy, twists and turns everywhere, then Abu Dhabi was exactly the same.
Yeah, different result, but exactly the same. Lots of thrills and spills, lots of action, lots of penalties. It was all on.
Even before the race, there was so much action. Albon and Colapinto both got 5 place grid penalties. Hülkenberg ended up having his lap time reviewed, so he got demoted from 4th on the grid to 7th on the grid. Hamilton qualified in 16th because he got a bollard stuck under his car. What are the chances?
That was wild. His last race for Mercedes as well, and for that to happen in qualifying, I was devastated for Lewis.
Even he said that, what are the chances? The biggest shock, I think, was Leclerc getting a 10-place grid penalty because he'd exceeded his battery allowance. So that dropped him to 19th on the grid, which basically, I mean, both of us messaged each other at the same time when we saw the announcement that he got a 10-place grid penalty and basically just said, may as well hand McLaren the championship, hand them the constructors. It's done. It's over. Because to start in 19th, there was one Ferrari fighting for the championship.
He clawed his way back up to finish in third place. Driver of the day, amazing drive by Charles Leclerc. Even though he was massively disappointed with his result and the result of the Constructors' Championship, It was an incredible performance by him and Carlos Sainz, who finished second. Carlos just drove like the legend that he is. He wanted to go out on a high, his last race for Ferrari. And Norris led from start to finish. Norris sealed the Constructors' Championship for McLaren. He started on pole and that little monkey on his back didn't get him this time. He managed to keep the lead and bring it home.
You didn't even see Norris on the broadcast because he was out front 3, 4 seconds, 5 seconds even the whole race. And, you know, fortunately for him, he had a fabulous race, but unfortunately for his TV time, it doesn't really do much to be that far ahead. But he was so lucky that he managed to avoid all of that lap one, turn one action.
What action on lap one? That was wild. For anyone that missed it, Piastri got taken out in lap one, got a nudge from
Verstappen.
Verstappen, of course, I gotta forget that. So Piastri got nudged by Verstappen around the first corner of lap one and ended up spinning and then continuing on to finish in 10th place. And he had to really fight hard to get there. He had a pretty forgettable race, to be honest. And then Hamilton, who, as you said, still started on the grid in 16th position, just fought and fought and fought and passed George Russell in the last lap to come home fourth, which was a really lovely way for him to end his time with Mercedes. He was just pushing so hard those last 10 laps. Even I was cheering for him, not to overtake the Ferraris, but just to, you know, like it was really, really good to see.
Absolutely. He was on a reverse strategy to the rest of the field. And you know, they were tossing up whether it was going to be a one-stop or a two-stop race. And Mercedes managed to, for Hamilton, make it a one-stop race, which definitely helped him.
They all started on medium besides Hamilton, who was on hards.
Yeah. So because he had the one stop, he had really fresh tyres at the end and he just went up and up and up and up that the whole field, which was incredible to watch. Not so great. And people that didn't have such great races, we had Bottas. DNF'd.
Yep, DNF. After a collision with Magnussen, he had a massive lock-up on lap 31, and that was the end for Bottas. But we don't know what's happening with Bottas next year. So, yeah, what's next? What's next? We don't know.
We also had on lap 21, Colapinto DNF'd, which again, you know, he's not going to be in an F1 seat. So not a great way for him to finish his final race either. We also saw Lawson on the final lap DNF'd as well. The poor guy, he ended up with a 10-second stop-go penalty, which is huge because it's race-changing. His front left tyre didn't get fitted properly in the pit stop. So that penalty was for the safety reasons, basically. And after that, he final lap didn't finish because there was a mechanical error on the car. And Piastri also got a 5-second penalty for running up the butt of the Williams. One of the collisions we haven't even spoken about, huge ramifications for one of the drivers, Bottas and Perez, first lap.
First lap that saw Perez go out. So I've got some interesting stats that I came across today on social media. So this was Lewis Hamilton's last race for Mercedes. In 2012, it was Lewis Hamilton's last race for McLaren at the Brazilian Grand Prix. On lap one of both races, Perez retired, right? Red Bull's Drivers' Championship spun out on lap one and recovered to P6. In 2012, that was Sebastian Vettel. So last weekend, it was Verstappen. And then a British McLaren driver won the race in 2012. That was Jenson Button. And of course, Lando Norris won on the weekend. And a Spanish Ferrari driver finished in P2. That was Fernando Alonso back in 2012. And Carlos Sainz in Abu Dhabi. And the other Ferrari driver finished in P3. In 2012 in Brazil, that was Felipe Massa. And it was Charles Leclerc at Abu Dhabi. How freaky is that? And I've checked these stats. I saw it on social media. I thought, wow, that's amazing. That's awesome. And I went into the archives and checked. It's all true, all factually correct. And just incredible.
Are you joking?
I'm not joking. This is wild, isn't it? It's just Lewis Hamilton has got some juju, some woo-woo, some magical force around him, and amazing, hey?
Yeah, I don't deny that magical force. Do you know what else I saw on social media, actually? Very, very interesting. Juan Pablo Montoya came out and said that the McLarens need to be really, really careful because Max Verstappen is starting out of position. Actually, the whole field was out of position, which is why it was such a crazy first lap. And so much happened because you had some of the front runners fighting from the back, and that caused a little bit of But he said that the McLarens need to be really careful because at the start of the race, Verstappen has nothing to lose and he always wants to win. So he's going to go hard and there will be crashes if they don't make their way out of the gates as fast as they can. And what happened? Verstappen clipped Piastri. And all props to Verstappen. He did apologize for that collision. And I don't know if you heard the driver's radio, Piastri, just deadpan. I really am starting to enjoy his sense of humor. He delivers it really, really dry, really deadpan. And he just, over the radio, said, yep, move of a Formula One champion, that one.
I did hear that and I did have a little chuckle to myself as he said that. Speaking of wild races, Charles Leclerc made up 11 spots on lap one thanks to all of that argy-bargy that happened on the first lap. K-Mag also made up 7 spots. Verstappen lost 7 spots. Piastri lost 16 spots. And Yuki Tsunoda down 5 places.
Yeah, so Yuki Tsunoda dropped from the get-go. He almost stalled on the line. Almost. So if you watch back the replays, you can see he basically has the worst start that you could, well, not the worst start. Isaac Hadjar in F2 had the worst start ever.
Tsunoda had the worst start in Formula One. Yeah, it wasn't good. And then penalties. There were penalties galore handed out, 6 penalties given out, as, you know, we've talked about already. The race was wild.
So Max was already crowned the 2024 F1 World Champion. That happened back in Vegas. And while the Ferrari boys put in a stellar effort to try and clinch the constructors, Lando just had the most perfect run straight to the top of that podium. And it was a McLaren constructors.
That's the first time in 26 years that McLaren have won the constructors title. And there were massive celebrations. Did you hear that the whole team jumped on a plane in Abu Dhabi, flew to Bahrain, partied in Bahrain because the team's owned by Bahrain, and then flew back to Abu Dhabi to do testing and pack up
everything?
I know, crazy, right? But, you know, they had a lot to celebrate. It'd been a long time between Constructors' Championship drinks. Good luck to them.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of teams and celebrations, Bottas paid 5,000 euros for that team dinner, organised by Hamilton, paid for by Bottas.
Yeah, and how funny, though, that George Russell was the last one to arrive and apparently the only seat left at the table was the one next to Max Verstappen, who he's been having a massive spat with over the last week, which has escalated to team principals having words with each other, with Toto Wolff calling Christian Horner a yappy little terrier and Christian Horner coming out, the Red Bull team boss saying, oh, well, I'd rather be a terrier. They're unafraid of anything and they're unafraid of big dogs. I'd rather be a terrier than a wolf. We love the drama. We love the racing more, but we love the drama.
Absolutely. I am still really confused how all this beef started between George and Verstappen.
Oh, it was in qualifying because George dobbed in Max to the stewards for going too slow on the qualifying, and George said that he was impeding him. So he went to the steward. Max got a grid pace penalty for going too slow during qualifying. And because of the way George went about doing that with the stewards, Max said, I want nothing to do with the guy. And apparently Max said to George, I'm going to put your head in the effing wall, or words to that effect. Yeah. And so then George came out and said, I'm not going to take that. And someone's got to stand up to Max Verstappen. He's a bully. And then Christian Horner came out and said that George Russell had been hysterical all weekend. And then Toto came out and said, don't talk about my drivers. So, you know, there was a lot going on. But since the race and on race day, it's kind of all quietened down. I think the kids have taken their bat and ball and gone home, and it's all kind of quietened down, which is good. But it was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely crazy, like little children. And I'm sure they're glad that they're going to have this massive break now that they don't have to see each other.
That rivalry will continue on to next year. Max and George will never be friends. And that's just the way it is. A bit like how Hamilton and Max will never be friends. So there's no love lost between Mercedes and Red Bull.
Yeah. And there's no love lost between Verstappen and other drivers, quite clearly.
Oh, he's pally with a few of them, but not all of them. Like, he's pally with Lando, and he was pally with Danny Rick when Daniel was racing.
Could you not be pally with Danny?
And our very own Jack Doohan making his debut at Abu Dhabi, the boy from the Gold Coast, son of MotoGP world champion Mick Doohan. He unfortunately qualified plumb last on his very first outing, but like it's his first Grand Prix. And he hasn't been racing for a year because he's been Alpine's reserve driver, right?
Look, he qualified plumb last, but thanks to all the grid penalties, he did actually start in 17th. So it wasn't as bad as it sounds.
No, and he crossed the finish line in 15th position, which, you know, but most importantly, he brought the car home clean. He didn't crash the car. He got that first race under his belt. That takes a little bit of pressure off Melbourne next year, which is his home Grand Prix. Any home race for any driver is just crazy with all the sponsor commitments, media commitments, all the family and friends that just want a piece of them on that weekend. So to be able to get that first race done is huge. And he said himself he learned so much with every lap of that race. So, yeah, well done, Jack.
Yeah. And I think, as you said, bringing it home clean, that's more than so many of the other drivers can say. So, and so, more than so many rookies can say as well. I think he did a magnificent job. He also, bless his cotton socks, was so cute talking about how exciting everything was for him. It's the first time that he did so many things. He was mentioning it's the first time that he's ever had to do the fan walk, the first time he's ever had to do everything. So, a good practice for Melbourne.
Yeah, definitely. And that Alpine is a car on the rise as well. We've seen Pierre Gasly just on fire the last few races. Pierre Gasly should just add finished seventh in the race, and Pierre Gasly qualified in sixth position. And Alpine qualifying sixth, amazing. Though the drivers in front of Gasly were Verstappen, current and past world champion. Hülkenberg, an massively experienced driver. Sainz in a Ferrari. Piastri and Norris, both in McLarens. The Alpine car's showing a lot of promise, and we've got good things to look forward to with Jack Doohan in the Alpine next year. Mm. All right, so what was the baby news you mentioned?
Who would have ever thought, certainly not me, that we would be hearing from Verstappen that he's going to be a dad?
A dad. So Max Verstappen's 27. He's been a stepdad to Kelly Piquet's little girl, who I think is about 6 years old now. And they just announced their pregnancy, that they're pregnant, due in June, I believe.
There's been a lot of talk about it, and a lot of people have been maybe hinting at that he will think about retiring, or it's going to affect his racing. And he's been very quick to knock all that back and say that he's already been a parent. He's used to parenting Kelly Piquet's daughter as a stepdad. The only difference is this child is going to have his DNA. He said he might have to cut back on some of his other hobbies because he's very big into e-racing and that sort of stuff. And the time he spends on that might have to change, but he can't foresee any changes in his racing when he becomes a dad. So we will see.
And then his teammate, Sergio Perez, who was knocked out on lap one of the last race, he's been under enormous pressure that we've talked about in previous episodes, enormous pressure with his seat at Red Bull. It's looking pretty unlikely that he will continue. His results just haven't been there. The rumours are rife that Kiwi Liam Lawson is going to take the seat. But what about poor Tsunoda, who's out-qualified him, who's, you know, done the hard yards? It's a tough one.
I agree with you. I mean, as much as I would love to see some fresh talent in that Red Bull seat. I don't want Lawson in that Red Bull seat over Tsunoda. I don't think Tsunoda is the best option for the Red Bull seat. But if we're talking out of Lawson and Tsunoda, Tsunoda for sure.
Yeah, look, I think Yuki Tsunoda, he's grown so much in the last 12 months. If you look back like 2 years ago, he was just a hot-headed. He didn't train. He came out publicly saying he hates exercise. And now like he's had like a massive mindset shift. He's got a different trainer now. I think it started when he had Daniel Ricciardo's old trainer, Michael Italiano. I think things started to improve with Yuki. And he said, no, training's fun now. Michael makes it fun. I think that was a bit of a turning point. He seems to have really settled in to Formula One now. He's more consistent. He's making less mistakes. I mean, who knows? We're just going to have to watch this space.
Absolutely. Do you know what I think has also helped Tsunoda is this realization that he's no longer second driver. He didn't have to prove so much because he knew that he was not second driver. He was fighting to be recognized, fighting to be first driver. And he doesn't have to do that anymore because he is first driver. As he said, he's been able to settle in, really take the role seriously rather than being hot-headed and wanting to prove himself like Liam Lawson.
Well, that's the name of the game in Formula One, isn't it? I've got another fun fact for you. So Pierre Gasly is the only driver in Formula One history, in the history of the sport. Next year is 75 years of Formula One. First driver ever to complete a season with no damage to a car.
Yeah.
Incurring no costs, no crashes, no damage. And another fun fact is our boy, Oscar Piastri, is the only driver on the grid who has done every single lap of every single race of the 24 races that we've had in the 2024 Formula One World Championship. And the only other drivers to have done that in the past are Michael Schumacher, Lewis Hamilton, and Max Verstappen. So three other world champions are the only other people who have done that. So I think the writing's on the wall. Our Oscar, Lando thinks it's his year next year, but I beg to differ.
What does that say about Oscar? One of the commentators was saying that Oscar is world champion material. And we know that. We're Australian. Of course we know that he's world champion material. But if we actually look at, you know, the laps he's putting in, the drives he's putting in, he is world champion material. This is just, as you said, writing on the wall.
So Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates in the Middle East was the destination for the last race of the season, despite Dubai being perhaps the first city that springs to mind when you think of the UAE. Abu Dhabi is actually the capital.
Indeed it is. And you've been to Dubai, right?
Several times. Yeah, we've used Dubai as a stopover. It's a great place for a stopover if you're traveling to and from Europe from Australia. From Perth, it's the quickest way to get to Europe is to go through the Middle East and have a stopover there. And it really just breaks up the trip and just helps with jet lag.
Yeah. So, and can you stop over in Abu Dhabi? Or is it just... Yes.
No, you can.
Okay. But most people seem to stop over in Dubai, which is why I think most people associate Dubai with the UAE.
Being in the same country, Abu Dhabi and Dubai, they are very similar in culture, deep-rooted in Islamic culture, Persian culture, Arabic culture, and the architecture is really similar. A mix of super modern and then you've got the more traditional souks and places like that.
From my experiences with the Middle East, that seems to be quite a common thing with these bigger cities. They're pushing so hard for all this ultra-modern, crazy, crazy architecture. I mean, in Abu Dhabi, you can actually see the Louvre, which is obviously an art gallery. Fun fact, they have an agreement with France to call it the Louvre up until 2047 or something, because the French are very protective of all their names and all that sort of stuff. So they have granted Abu Dhabi the right to call their art gallery the Louvre. And it's a collaboration between Abu Dhabi and France. But if you follow travel influencers and travel influencers who have been to Abu Dhabi, one of the most common things you will see is it's like an amphitheater filled with water. this really modern room that's actually at the Louvre. And it's got this big rounded roof, and it's a very good example of this ultra modern architecture, which is so cool.
Yeah, but I think the biggest thing about Abu Dhabi that makes me want to go there is Ferrari World. Ferrari World, it's been opened, I think, for about 12 years. I don't actually know, but it's been open for a while, but I haven't got there yet. I have been to the Ferrari Museum and the Ferrari Factory in Modena in Italy twice and loved it. I can't stop raving about that fabulous Ferrari World. Would encourage me to stop in Abu Dhabi if the flight prices were right.
Oh, absolutely. It's different to the one in Modena though, right? Because it's a theme park.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So fun, but from what I've been looking at in Abu Dhabi, one of the places that I would really like to visit when I'm there one day for the Grand Prix, obviously at Yas Marina, one of the things that really excited me was they've got a mangrove national park and it's right in the city. So if you look at photos, it's just, it's absolutely beautiful. And I'm thinking about the color of the Gulf from when we were in Qatar, and it's this almost opaquish, I hate saying the word turquoise. It's a travel writer's pet hate is the word turquoise.
Turquoise waters. Yes, but it's like a opaque aquamarine, almost iridescent in colour. Am I on the right track here?
You've got it. That's what the colour of it looks like. And there's boardwalks through the mangroves. You can sup through there.
It's, oh, cool.
As I said, right close to the city. So, which is probably not something you'd ever think about when you think about the Middle East and the desert.
I would never have thought that there was a stand-up paddleboard tour or experience through mangroves in Abu Dhabi. Like, that's good research, Mon.
Thank you very much. I'm fascinated by the Middle East now. I've had my taste of it, and now I just want to go to all of the races, all of the Middle Eastern destinations. I think this race would be an interesting one to go to, especially if you could get, I don't know, a spot at the W Hotel over the track.
Sounds pretty good. But speaking of taste of Middle East, Monique, did you have a taste of the Middle East on the weekend?
I did. I was finally home to cook. So, oh my gosh. The Middle East is obviously one of those, or cooking Middle Eastern cuisine is not something that I do regularly. It's just, it never really pops to mind to kind of look at Middle Eastern recipes, and that's just personal taste, personal preferences. So I always love it when the Formula One races go to destinations where I might not necessarily think to cook their cuisine. So this week I cooked what's called a makbous. Forgive me if I've pronounced that wrong. It's actually very similar to a lot of the dishes in, I think each kind of Middle Eastern country has their own version of it, but it's basically like a kind of a risotto or pilaf rice dish and some chicken. And it's so easy to make. It's basically you have to chop an onion and crush some garlic and then put a whole bunch of spices in. And the spices are so beautiful. It's really, deep, rich cinnamon, allspice. I had to go shopping for dried lime because walking through the markets in Qatar, they were everywhere. And I was like, oh, I should buy some. Do you think I bought some? No.
No, there's a new producer in Western Australia, actually, who's just started supplying dried lime. It's a thing. Yeah, dried black lime. I love Middle Eastern food. It is, after Italian food, it's probably my second favorite cuisine to eat. And Zorba, my husband, loves Middle Eastern food as well, which is why we've been to Dubai several times, because we eat really well. The hotels there are really great. It's a really easy stopover. And he's really happy there because, yeah, we eat really well. And yeah, so like I love all those spices, the za'atar, and they use saffron a lot. And yeah, it's a really beautiful cuisine. Lots of hummus, which is just one of my favorite foods.
Yeah. So if you had have cooked for this race, what would you have chosen?
I probably would have cooked something like you've mentioned, like a rice, because a lot of their food is a rice dish with lots of spices, some almonds, some nuts usually through the rice as well. Or I might have done like a flatbread, like a homemade flatbread with some homemade hummus and maybe some baba ganoush or that kind of, you know, dip. The meze. I love meze. Like, that's just, you know, a really easy, casual way to eat and share food. Often when we go out, we'll order meze like tabbouleh and, you know, those things. And then the main dish will come out and be like, oh my God, we're so full.
It's quite interesting to hear that Middle Eastern food is one of your favorite cuisines.
Next week, we won't have a race to bring you, but we're going to have a look at the highs and lows. We're going to look at the season, bring you any news and goss that happens between now and then. So have you got any highlights of the season? Let us know.
Thanks for listening, guys. If you enjoy our podcast, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast listening app. Every little piece of feedback and every rating really helps. So if you have any questions, comments, feedback, suggestions, please email us at And Away We Go, f1podcast@gmail.com. And you can also follow us on all your social media, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn. Just search for And Away We Go, F1 Podcast. We'll leave all of the links in our show notes so you can find us easily.
Fabulous. Well, thank you very much for listening. If you've listened to our first two episodes, we're so excited about this brand new podcast. And thank you to everyone that has sent us beautiful messages of encouragement and support and just giving us a lot of positive feedback. It really has made our hearts swell massively. Like, so thank you very much. Thanks, Mon. And thank you for having us in your ears. We've got 95 days to go into Australia, but who's counting? Until next week and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Chicato.
Let's do it.